Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, this is H1. We're going to be running it back with another episode talking about chess knowledge, chess wisdom, and chess understanding again. And today I have with us King Crusher. He is he makes amazing content on YouTube. He streams on Twitch. He has tournaments, a lot of tournaments on leadchess.org. And he's been in the game for a while. And yeah, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to introduce yourself?
I've been a YouTuber for quite a while. I'm sort of webmaster of chessworld.net. It's a correspondence server. So I've been sort of doing chess professionally for like more than 20 years. Before that, I had normal sort of jobs, you know, for IT. I was like in IT, but yeah, I got into chess, sort of trying to, you know, make a living out of chess, and it's been a lot of fun over the years. So I was one of the early YouTubers. I think my peak was like top 10 YouTuber at some point, but there's so much competition now for YouTube. Yeah, the landscape's really changed now.
Right. And the first time that I seen some of your content was like a decade ago. And I was thinking, and I said this on a Perpetual Chess podcast, is that, yeah, you was one of the OGs, the very first one. It was like you, John Bartholomew, Chess Bros, that really started this whole chess on YouTube thing. And it's really cool to actually have you on the podcast, kind of geeking out.
That was a really interesting time. Yeah, I mean, there was also like J. Roby Chess, that there were Green Castle book. I mean, there was quite a few others. Matagelic actually got me in to YouTube. I saw him do a video, and he just showed me how to do a right recording with just a basic camera. But yeah, it was a very interesting time, that early like YouTube experience.
Yeah. And actually, I wanted to talk about something a little bit interesting that most people wouldn't know about in the audience, because right now everybody knows about like just chess.com, and chess.com is like the spot to go to. Do you remember like the other odd websites that you used to play chess on?
Absolutely.
Chess.org.
Yeah. Chess Cube was one. I think it was a bit sad because they had this qubit system. When they introduced that, I noticed the tournaments were getting less popular. It was harder to get pairings and tournaments. I think it sort of went in decline. But also, you know, the technology was based on Flash, and that had security issues. And now it's not really supported by browsers as well. So a lot of things happened, and sort of it went down big time. And there were some other ones. It's kind of difficult. You know, there's technology changes as well to adapt to as well, isn't it? As well as community, making sure you've got enough people, especially, you know, these online sites, they really require a lot of people on at the same time. Otherwise it starts to feel empty, and it can sort of diminish. So yeah, ChessCube was an early example. Myself and Chess Network were playing quite a bit on ChessCube, and Chess Bros were playing on ChessCube quite a bit.
I remember ChessCube. That was like the very first content that I seen. I was like, oh, this is new. I just thought it was just chess.com back then. And then I seen ChessCube. And then I think slowly you went from ChessCube. I don't know which platform you was playing on first. Maybe the Internet Chess Club first, and then ChessCube, and then leadchess.org.
Internet Chess Club was very good at the time, because the 5-minute auto pairing, I think, is an ideal thing for me doing YouTube videos, which you can get a bit of thought behind moves. It's still not more than 15 minutes usually. A bit of post-mortem analysis after the game, And yeah, Chess Explained was also very hot on the Internet Chess Club, and we were creating lots of videos at the time, three videos a day each at some point. It was like this big, long, massive playlist, thousands of live commentary videos on ICC. But now, yeah, Lee Chess is my main, you know, when in the evening, I like relaxing with bullet chess in the evening. I find it quite relaxing, bullet chess.
What do you say that, like, the Internet Chess Club was pretty much the place that you go to like face off against real competition back then?
Absolutely. Such strong opposition. I played people like Nadaritsky back in the day. I managed to win against Nadaritsky when he was a junior. And there were quite a few other title players. I had this scalps list. I've got this scalps list playlist, which, yeah, there's so many IMs and GMs. It's, you know, FM, any title players. Yeah, I've played quite a few. That was a very, very interesting time for playing very strong opponents on the ICC. Right. Very, very strong.
Yeah. Is it? Actually, I think I've seen it. It was still around, right? And so people still get on there to play, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think actually, you know what? I think I suspect there's going to be changes in the new year. I think they want to move away. I get the idea they want to move away from their infrastructure. Mm. I think they might be moving infrastructure soon. I think the adage is adapt or die. If you don't adapt, you can end up being kind of irrelevant. That's the thing about chess. You know, it's not just about playing. Yeah, you've got maximum convenience for users, not to have to download something. I think they realize that. And yeah, I mean, there's also chess space. Play Chess.com has been around for a bit. I've played on that a bit as well, and I had some broadcast there at some point. That was quite interesting. And Chess24, of course, was kind of bought recently by Chess.com, and the playing zone, unfortunately, is no more. But I did like the Sunday, you know, banter blitz on Chess24. I think that's going to be missed by quite a few people. Yeah.
Right. I haven't been on Chess24 in a while, but I know that they have some grandmasters that give really good commentary when going over the tournaments. So, yeah, sometimes I watch their content, and then I don't know. I think I see some streams where there is working with chess.com too. So I don't know. It's very confusing nowadays because it used to just be like everybody was just separated. So I don't know. Something might just be going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, I think they were bought. They were bought by Chess.com. Yeah, that's why.
They was. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know. I don't know all the details. Thank you. Now I seem very ignorant.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
that's why they sort of zapped their play zone, because it's sort of duplicate, you know, these like brutal mergers sort of thing.
Even realize it. They did it so cleanly. That's a good job on them. That's a good job on them. Because I was wondering, like, okay, there's grandmasters on chess.com that I used to watch on Chess24 all the time. And yeah, their studio changed. Okay, that makes complete sense. makes complete sense. Okay. Now, usually I go like how do you play chess? How did you learn how to play chess type of conversation? But I want to go somewhere different since you're a content creator. What made you start creating content on social media? Because that not everybody was doing that. I don't know if you was watching somebody that was like doing that first, and then you said that, oh, maybe I could do it better. Or you just thought maybe chess content should be on the internet.
Yeah, I think Matagelic did some videos. I thought, oh, this could be fun. I thought it could be useful marketing for my correspondence server. So my correspondence server, chessworld.net, I thought, let me do some entertainment and maybe that sort of marketing. And that was good. And I found it was very addictive to do that in its own right after. So I actually really quite liked having a YouTube channel on the side. But one thing that particularly got me, you know, I was doing okay with Chess World financially, but I really wanted people discussing games. I never really got that going. But what I found on YouTube with that dedicated audience is I did get people chatting, at least on my own live commentary games. And it's a buzz to it's like another reward. You know, it's not everything's just about money. It's about this reward of seeing a community talking about games. Oh, you missed that. Oh, that's an interesting move. That's an interesting plan. I really kind of like that. And also one of my favorite sites, I have to plug chessgames.com. I use that every day still, even though it's outdated technology. I really love the site because, you know, the kibitzing there is, I love this idea of chatting about historical games. and, you know, finding resources that maybe the players didn't see. And you know, when you put these historical games into modern engines, you find some amazing resources, of course, and it changes the whole picture of things. And you can be more certain of what the mistakes were, or a little bit more certain of what the mistakes were, or the turning points of the games. So that's quite interesting.
And yeah, you did build a big community. And so your first video on YouTube, do you still remember what it was? Or do you still remember that moment? Game. It was a Fisher game?
It was a Fisher game where he provoked, I think, E5, a king's in your defense. He provoked E5, the knight went back. Later, there was a beautiful queen sack to actually checkmate. Yeah, it's a classic Fisher game I signed off with. I believe that's one of my first,
Yeah, I'm going to have a... Is it still on there?
Still on your YouTube channel? Yeah, unfortunately, the name of this opponent escapes me. But yeah, I think it's...
I'm going to have to scroll all the way down from all the content that you created just to see your beginning videos, because that would be pretty interesting. It's like a social experiment. Do you remember when you got your first 1,000 subscribers on YouTube? Or first 10,000?
It wasn't about subscribers. It was just about getting people, you know, chatting about games. I no, it wasn't all. It's kind of mercenary nowadays, and I think people are put off that if they do a video, oh, it's the number of views or whatever. At the time, it was just about getting people chatting about games, and now it's all a bit sort of more cold about statistics and stuff. And that wasn't a big deal at the time at all. Actually, it was just about the pleasure of getting people talking about chess games.
Yeah, because nowadays it's more about like getting the right thumbnail title.
Yeah, it's very, very professional.
Getting views it's more viewed based than like subscriber based with the algorithm nowadays, and so it's a lot more complicated for the creators. I understand that.
Yeah, but there was so much less competition, so I did get, you know, a decent view. Yeah, it's hard to get views. I always feel embarrassed. No, maybe I shouldn't, because it's not getting any views. I'm working more on, you know, creating courses nowadays, and I kind of enjoy that. There's a community there as well. You know, I'm on Udemy mostly creating courses, and kingscrusher.tv.
I've seen that. You have a lot of courses with a whole bunch of hours in those courses.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Man, if you bought one of those courses, those 20-hour ones, you would be straight on your whole opening repertoire.
I love that, because, you know, my best hours are in the morning. I get up, you know, sometimes 6:30 in the morning, work till I'm completely drained mentally, and then I sort of relax for the rest of the day, or do a bit of research around the course layout on my iPad or whatever. Yeah, it's a good sort of routine I've got into, and I think I try and link back to the site. They allow a bonus lecture. I can link back to the site. It's a bit of promotion maybe as well. But yeah, that's been really, I've really enjoyed creating courses recently. That shift from YouTube to creating courses, I really kind of like doing that,
What would you say is your most popular one?
Oh, The Complete Guide to Chess Tactics. Yeah, it's been a bestseller since I first created it. The Complete Guide to Chess Tactics. Because I think tactics, without tactics, I think you're nowhere in chess. Doesn't matter if you know of openings, pawn structure, and tactics pervade the whole thing. You know, if you're good tactically, you can like swindle the position if you've got a bad opening position, or you can swindle end games tactically. I think tactics are like the key thing to work on to really boost rating. So I think that it makes sense that it's actually one of my bestsellers. This being my biggest bestseller, The Complete Guide to Chess Tactics. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you believe in a statement like chess is 99% tactics? You believe
yes,
in
that was Teichmann, wasn't it? Richard Teichmann, a blind patch. Yeah, he was a very good player as well. Yeah, he exaggerated a bit, but I do think you've got to be good tactically to go anywhere. I mean, you know, the hypermodernists, you know, like Nimzowitz, whatever, if they weren't good tactically, they wouldn't be able to provide credibility for their theories. You know, there's no use knowing about overprotection, prophylaxis, all of that. If you know, he was a brilliant tactician. You look at his games, Nimzowitz, he's a brilliant tactician as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie. I'm more of a positional player. I guess that's what people tell me. If I get into like a positional position, then I can grind it out until the end game. My tactics is a little bit, if I have to, I'll go into it. But every time I go into like the computer, the analysis, it'd be like, well, you kind of missed this move. And then I'm like, well, I still won the game, Stockfish. So who cares? Yeah, I do believe that tactics is really important, and definitely calculation too, seeing all your checks, captures, and and threats in a position, because most people just use that one thing.
Yeah, that's a major bit of advice I give to my team. Yeah, check. Yeah, the forcing moves. Prioritize the forcing moves. I like positional chess as well. I mean, don't get me wrong. But sometimes, if you're playing in those all you can play tournaments where you win a game, you get another game, it's good to just wipe people out quickly tactically. You know, I like the gambits. Just wipe them out, get the next game. That's why I'm sort of winning quite a lot of those bullet tournaments, because I'm able to quickly just destroy opponents and
get I was going to talk about that too. So you are formerly known as the King Crusher, right? And when I seen your videos, I was like, okay, why is this guy known as the King Crusher? And you're opening repertoire is it matches your name precisely. How did you create your opener? Actually, can you tell your opening repertoire to the audience, and how did you gain to create those, like that opening repertoire where you just want to get into a position to attack the opponent's king?
Well, it's tailored for the Lee Chess bullet or 3 minute tournaments. Yeah. So as white, I wouldn't want to go into a Royal of Pairs, because there's loads of different variations. If you play Bishop B5, you're setting yourself up to have to know tons and tons of Royal of Pairs through. So I like the Vienna game. That's a good alternative. Mm-hmm. And there's this book, Play Better Chess, by Leonard Bardon. He talked about the Vienna game being a good point scorer. And the thing is, if they can quickly go wrong, if when you play F4 in a Vienna game, they don't always play D5, and you can get a really big, juicy positional attacking advantage straight away. So that's like against E5. Sicilian, I love the Smith-Morra gambit, which I used to call the Morra-Smith gambit. But yeah, Essamon is also, playing that. And that's got credibility, that Smith-Morra gambit. Mm-hmm. It saves you knowing all of that theory of all the different Sicilian defense variations. So I love that cutting through, having to know tons and tons of theory and having these dangerous systems. So Kara Khan, I've been working on this weird gambit where I don't play knight takes c4, I play bishop c4 and an f3, sort of playing it like a Black Mardima gambit in a way. Yeah. I think
I'm surprised you don't play like the fantasy variation against the Kara Khan.
Yeah, that is dangerous. I've been meaning to get into that. That is, or even do a course on that. That is a very, very, Tartko, I think, invented that variation. Svadi Tartko, yeah, the fantasy variation. You can get very dangerous f-file, anything involving f-file, something up with f-files, that can be very, very dangerous.
Right.
Yeah, that is a very dangerous variation.
Okay. So have you ever been able to like meet other content creators in the same sector that you've been in? Or like Metal Jellic, all the OG creators?
He's been in the Netherlands, quite far away. Testnut was in the States. Not too much. I did meet up with Chess Explain, though. He did come to London. That was very cool.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I got a sense he just really knew his openings and everything. He knows a lot more, I think, opening theory than most other IMs. Yeah, I did to meet him. That was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, when I used to watch his content, I would actually steal his opening repertoire just a little bit, because it's so precise and it's simple. It's easy to like. I think he plays a little bit like me too. So I used to always like see exactly, okay, he plays this, he plays that. Okay, that makes sense.
Yes, fantastic player. Yeah, fantastic guy. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so how did you actually get into chess? Let's just get into it.
Okay, so I got a brother, 7 years older. So my dad taught me the game. So I started around maybe seven. By the way, on the news, by the way, just yesterday, there's this 8-year-old girl that's like already beating IMs. It's unbelievable. So things have changed. It's like you can be very strong at eight even nowadays, apparently. But yeah, I started around seven. My ECF rating was quite good to start off with when I remember causing a bit of a stir, beating this junior I shouldn't have beaten. And the tournament controller was kind of upset with me or something. Oh my dad! I was just thinking, I was just enjoying the game, getting a knight outpost in the Sicilian on c4. Maybe inspired by some Fischer games or whatever. Got his bishop and I beat him out. But anyway, so then in 1989, I won the Lloyds Bank Junior, national tournament. It wasn't the official British under 18; it was Lloyds Bank Junior though, and that was incredible, because I beat quite a few juniors much higher. So a few years later, so I hit around 2260 FIDE. So in retrospect, from about the 1990s, I got the CM title in retrospect, really. I wasn't really chasing titles at the time. It's just a shame I didn't get over 2300. Maybe one day I'll try and maybe try my luck in a few tournaments, trying to get a bit more FIDE rating. But I don't know, it's exhausting. One day chess for me is now pretty exhausting. I kind of prefer online chess, because it's yeah, it's just a lot of fun and relaxing and doesn't drain you for like weeks. You know, if you have to play like a 1 week tournament, it's quite an investment of time and energy and effort.
Yeah, and those tournaments are just to the audience, those tournaments could be like long time controls. It could be a whole weekend. And at most tournaments, there'll be like 2 hours on both sides or 1 hour on both sides. And I know there's one tournament that I want to attend in March that you have to play like three games on Saturday of these classical games. I'm like, it's a lot of pressure, honestly. And you're going to be better out of it because it's nothing like sitting at a chessboard for like hours on end and calculating positions and just zoning out, not thinking about the bills that you got due the next day. But, you know, the chess tournaments, that's how chess tournaments are in classical chess. I haven't really been able to attend Blitz tournaments dealing with the USCF, but that would be fun too. Have you been?
This 8-year-old girl on the news just last night. Yeah, it was a Blitz tournament somewhere. I think she's got Anna in the name. Sorry, I don't remember the name, but it's
I think I see chess.com actually advertise that, right? Or Chess Base, or it was one of the networks.
Yeah.
She pretty much had the best tournament of her life.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And okay. So I was going to actually ask, what interesting chess players have you met over the past years?
I managed to see Nakamura. I got a selfie with Nakamura at some point. Jennifer Scheid, when they came down for the London Classic. Also, I played at Gibraltar. I also got to play Blitz with Nakamura. That was a very interesting experience to play at Gibraltar. If there's one tournament you want to play in, that's really nice. Kalita Hotel Gibraltar. It's quite a money investment to play there. The internet's not that good, but I think I played in the British Championship, the main British Championship, twice. So you know, I've seen quite a lot of the British players, and it was very interesting experience. I should really try and play more one day chess. So here it's usually one day chess. It's just one game on the day, so you'd be preparing the night before against a specific opponent. And then, it's like whole day could be blown on, potentially a blunder. But no, I think if you have the right attitude of just making it a learning and a social experience, sometimes I haven't had the right attitude, but I think it's important to get the right attitude that you're going to, learn something from if you're going to invest like, days and days in a tournament like that.
One game a day. Do most people go into the tournament thinking, I'm just going to crush all these people, I'm not going to make friends with anybody? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, don't do that. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I would be disappointed because you've lost so many FIDE rating points when you lose to someone on the rate. I think there are certain things which it's better. My best results have been when I've treated the tournament like a sort of holiday tournament. I think if you have that attitude, that's probably the best attitude to have. Just try and enjoy the time, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what was your chess playing skills inspired by? Like, what was your chess repertoire inspired by? If you would name any chess player, it could be in the present, it could be in the past, etc.
Well, on the YouTube channel, I did focus a lot on Garry Kasparov because he had such a domination over, his peers. Also, Fischer. The World Chess Champions provide a great set of players to check out. So I like the attacking dynamic players, but I do like the positional players like Capablanca. When you go over Capablanca game, I do appreciate the elegance of it. And, the slightest advice he could simplify that out and win the end game. He was better at end games than most people. I mean, Rubenstein was good as well. And then I've discovered the uncrowned kings of the game though. So I think it's good to learn from the likes of, Viktor Korchnoi, Bent Larsen, Akiba Rubenstein. There's uncrowned kings as well, but the world champions provide a good roadmap to check out, Steinitz, Lasker, Capablanca, Fischer, all the world champions basically. Yeah, but Fischer, Kasparov were two of my favorites, actually. Magnus Carlsen, Fischer, Kasparov, Magnus Carlsen, on YouTube at least. They're like some of my, and Nakamura, I find his style very, very entertaining and aggressive and dynamic.
Right. And did you see the recent chess tournament that just happened, the rapid tournament that Magnus Carlsen won?
I haven't been following the events. I usually just get buried in creating courses. I'm following Reddit a bit. I see a lot of the drama on Reddit recently.
Wesley's still playing B3 and et cetera, all that drama behind the scenes. And then Wesley So actually played a lot of good games in that tournament. And then I think Fabio Caruana got a lot of good games too. He's getting his rapid score actually up there. I mean, not up there. Magnus Carlsen is still at the top. And I don't know who I'll place second. I'll probably myself place like Hikaru Nakamura second, and then maybe Fabio Caruana. Fabio Caruana is really good at classical. Some of the repertoires and stuff like that. Who would you put at the top in your list? Your top five chess players?
Oh, today, the current players.
Yep.
I mean, Magnus Carlsen, I mean, Ding Liren's the official world champion. I haven't been following top level chess that intently, but
Okay.
yeah, I mean, Levon Aronian's been strong in many. I mean, he's usually up there, regardless. Like the last, 20 years, he's been up there consistently. Caruana, absolutely. He's been feels seems very analytical and focused. I mean, the top players. I like the ones with great consistency. For me, like Michael Adams has a fantastic consistency. If we take the last 20 years, he's often been over 2,700. I don't know if that's because of his positional style, but you've also, got ones that are really quite consistent and so, ones that fall off the radar a bit.
That makes sense. Okay, so just to finish this off, I do want to talk about your courses a little bit. What do you think was like the hardest thing to when you was creating those courses? Because you have a lot of them, and they're super long, and I'm pretty sure it's just in-depth repertoires that probably is a lot of novelties in those courses too. What do you think was the hardest part into creating those?
The instant gratification thing, when you like I did a YouTube video to shift from that mindset of, about getting views, getting comments, to sort of, privately be constructing a course. But I like to think of it like, oh, it's like an armada of videos all helping each other. And you can't really easily do that on YouTube. There are some perks. You can replace, videos, or you can update the analysis without, on YouTube, it's sort of fixed with that URL, aren't you? You can't really replace a video. So there are perks for creating a course. It's a slightly different mindset of, gradually sort of doing it day by day. And I like sort of winding up with interesting conclusions, which I put as, my intro videos after. So it's like going on a journey. Like I'm going on a journey with hypermoderns, the hypermodernists, we're finding useful exceptions to established theory. Any time I think, oh, this is a really interesting aspect here, I'll make a note of it, and then, days later, that could turn up into an intro video about like Nimzowitsch's prophylaxis or overprotection or some fancy concepts he had. And so, yeah, I just love the whole process of creating courses with videos. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It's just, I think, just as long as you get rid of that addiction to having to get views and comments. And I've sort of abandoned, I sort of neglected the YouTube channel to some extent, though. So it's a bit of sacrifice. You can't be everywhere all the time. Sometimes you've got to like invest your time and energy, to certain things which you think would be more rewarding.
And your audience probably already appreciate the videos that you already been putting out. Most people retire YouTube at like, I know you're not retired because you still like put out content, and I see you stream on Twitch too. But most people retire on YouTube in
Right, yeah.
10 years anyway, if you think
See
about
your
it.
point. Yeah, that's a good point. That's
Right.
a
Because
good point.
just doing a whole bunch of content, that's just it's just this, statistically speaking, most people retire in like 10 years, you move on. But yeah, I'm glad that you really like making courses. I mean, I like making my first chessboard course too, which was pretty awesome because I've never made a course before, and they made it pretty simple. So, and
Cool, yeah.
where can you actually find your courses? And if you want to shout out anything else, you can.
Oh, just my discount page, which links to Udemy, is kingscrusher.tv.
Okay.
It's just kingscrusher.tv. If you put that, that's that I'll use that short URL service. There's a short URL service which you might find useful as well, because then you can see the traffic to that URL. So I'll recommend that if you're gonna do your own courses in the future, maybe. Mm-hmm. To have a course page and just have that short URL.
And then is the Elite Chess group open for everybody, or is it just for a certain, if it is it just like a private group?
Oh, my team at Elite Chess, mm-hmm. I really enjoy the every 2 weeks there's a team event, mega team event, you know, with over 190 teams. So yeah, if you want to join my King's Crusher team, everyone is welcome to join my King's Crusher team, and I'll give sometimes tips, and I'll mention any new courses there as well in the team messages. Yeah, Leech is absolutely, you know, great fun. The team events especially, they're really good.
I guess we didn't really get time to talk about that platform. When it first came out, I was actually enjoying it a lot, and I actually think it's great that it's like a non-profit platform too, because when I was younger, I didn't have any money to pay for the chess.com subscription, so it was a really good resource to learn how to get better in chess.
Yeah. Unlike ChessCube, you know, the tournaments are getting more and more populated, more and more competitive. It's really quite fascinating. Yeah, it's there's a lot of activity there. Yeah.
Yeah, because they have those tournaments. I know they do something different. What is that called? Before the match, you can on leadchess.org, you can like cut half of your time. I forgot what it was called. Because it helps you get more points.
Oh, Berserk.
In the tournaments.
Yeah, to get more points.
Yeah, you get Berserk. Right, which is pretty fun. I feel like all online chess tournaments should give you that option.
Yeah,
because I know chess.com has like Arena Kings, and then like other platforms has their other things.
I give a shout out to this guy that has done Lee Chess Tools. You can find it in the Chrome store. So if you want to find gamuts, there's also, it's like this amazing Lee Chess extensions you can get. One of them is called Lee Chess Tools. I think side right. So you can navigate gambits if you wanted to see where gambits are. It's this Chrome extension as well, which adds a lot of power to Lee Chess actually in various ways. Right. So yeah, it's an amazing platform. I think the code behind it is so well done as well. The code quality, I think, mm-hmm. makes it easier for them to add, you know, new stuff later.
And top players play on it too all the time. I know. Seen tournaments. I mean, that was actually an Elite Chess tournament. That was the first time I played Wesley So. He demolished me, of course. But yeah, you could play like top players in the special events, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I managed to get a game in school. I missed a win against. Unfortunately, damn it. Yeah, unfortunately.
Dang, that sucks. Yeah, they always like. One thing that I've realized, because I'm trying to like pass a certain rating mark on chess.com, and I'm trying to get my national master's title. Hopefully I could do that. Like, hopefully I'm not to the point where I plateau yet, what all the other chess players talk about. But anyway, I'm realizing that the higher you go, the more resourceful, like way more resourceful chess players are.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
They don't just like go down easily. It's always like a position where this is really weird end game, and now I got to figure it out. And even though the computer tells me I'm like +2, it's still a weird position.
Yeah, there's a big difference between what an engine says and how easy the position is to play. I think you've got to factor in how easy the position is to play. You know, that's why I think gambits are very effective, you know, at fast time controls, because it makes it easier for you quite often to play the position, more difficult for the opponent. It doesn't matter if an engine thinks it's -1 or whatever, 2. You know, the gambits can be so dangerous. It's easy to play this because we're playing against humans, not against engines. So yeah, that's the thing that's cropped up in my recent course, is that greater awareness that people are shaping their repertoires based on engines. And that's silly in a way, because the human aspect of playing against another human is, you know, how easy is it for you to follow up in that position? It's all about the follow-up. It's not about, yeah, if it's technically +2, you might need like 50 accurate moves in a row to see that +2, you know, I'm exaggerating, but you know, could be ridiculous. Yeah,
most people don't know that. But yeah, it's that's a really good conversation in itself. I might have to explain that in one of my podcast episodes. Just the difference between like psychology with humans than like just trying to find the best computer move every single time, which that's just a waste of time, honestly, because your opponent, especially if your opponent has like under 1 minute, they're not going to find the number one computer, unless they're like Magnus Carlsen or Kara Nakamura. They're not going to find the number one computer move to defend in a certain position.
Exactly. But even in classical games, you know, Mikhail Tal, when he won in 1960 against Botvinnik, he put opponents under huge pressure, even if it was potentially unsound. You know, he knew about creating complexity back then.
Which, I know, when I found that out, like that his position was unsound, that actually disappointed me. I'm like, dang it, it was some beautiful games. But that it still explains the psychology in chess, because those games he was attacking his opponent outright, and they was beautiful. It was beautiful games.
Yeah, that's another one I love for YouTube, actually. Him and Nezmetanov, you know, the attacking players, basically, you know. There's other attacking players, you know, Mrozovic, you know, Shirov, Judit Polgar. All the attacking dynamic players, you know, I really did enjoy doing YouTube videos about, actually. Yeah, I think I do like attacking dynamic chess. I think Kasparov has been influenced by Alexander Alekhine. I've been meaning to do a course on Alekhine as well at some point, because I think he's a very dynamic, you know, very resourceful player. I think it's like... so tactical compared to he would have very big plus scores just like Kasparov, but you know. So
right,
yeah,
all right, well, I know I got like a little bit of a sore throat. It's early in the morning. I think it's like evening time for you, because you live, you know, I don't know if you tell everybody where you live, but yep, it's morning time. It's been a good talk. I appreciate everything that you did for the chess community and for like for the great content that I was able to look at, you know, when I was a young kid. So this has been awesome. It's been great.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yeah, honor. It's an honor.
It's a pleasure. An honor too, King Crusher. All right. Keep on fighting till the end. Stay focused in chess and in real life too. See you next time.
Cheers.